Welcome to the Finding Backcountry Podcast with your host, Dustin Whitwer.
I am Dustin Whitwer, and this is the Finding Backcountry Podcast. Follow along on my journey of learning from the best backcountry hunters each week as we explore valuable information I use to find success in the backcountry. Let's get to the show.
Hey guys, Dustin here, Finding Backcountry Podcast. Thanks for joining. This is a cool one. Sometimes I jump on here with people I don't necessarily know. I maybe see him on Instagram or something. In fact, I've got one I'm recording tomorrow with a guy on horses and horse packing and mules and stuff. And I can't say I even know the guy, but I just know him from Instagram. In this case, though, I've got what I would consider a friend. And we haven't hunted together. Have we, Wyatt, ever? Really?
No, I don't think we have. We've been together on hunts, been in close proximity a lot, but never done something together, which may change later this year.
Hopefully. And then, you're good friends with my brother too. And that's kind of where one of the stories we'll end up telling is a hunt you and my brother had an epic adventure on. But why don't you tell people just whatever you want to tell them, dude. This is super informal. But just so they have an idea of where you're coming from or who you are. I'm actually curious how you got into hunting, if it's been something you've been into your whole life or whatever.
Interesting you would bring that up at the end. I would love to talk a little bit about that. This is perfect timing. So from St. George, we grew up not far from each other. And I didn't grow up hunting. My dad didn't either. And so he moved out from Ohio to here and then ended up having me. And I am Wyatt McAvoy.
Friends
with you, friends with your brother. Yeah, not many Wyatts running around, so I like having that name.
But Wyatt's a strong name. That goes without saying, right? There's a couple legendary Wyatts throughout the years. So
yeah, there are. I'm named after Wyatt Earp, so a lot to live up to.
There you go. That's who I was thinking of.
Yep. So my dad got me into hunting when I was a teenager. And just followed some buddies of his around. They showed him the ropes a bit, and then he got me into it. And we did it a little bit in my early teenage years, and then I got more interested in girls and cars. And
that was out here in Utah, where you kind of got started.
Yeah, down here in Dameron Valley.
Yeah,
back then it was really great too. Not as many people, a lot of big deer.
Yeah, St. George probably hadn't quite blown up like it is now, right?
No, definitely not. And there's no big deer on Pine Valley at all right now, so nobody come hunt there. You'd waste your time.
Yeah.
So we did that. He got me into it. I got back in and started doing it on my own and with him a little bit in my early 20s. And that was like our thing in my teenage years, and then for the last decade or so that we really did together. How everyone has that with their parents. That was ours. And so the bison hunt was really special to me for a few different reasons, but one of which being, I just lost my dad to cancer a month ago tomorrow. And so being able to do something like that, and he was alive. He wasn't able to go with me because of the condition he was in, but he was able to, see that and be a part of it as much as he could before he passed away. And that meant the absolute world to him. So that was really special.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. All things considered, obviously, but, there's no good way to say this, I guess. I keep hounding my dad to get out on these hunts with us, and he does plenty. Maybe he even helped with some of your stuff. I can't remember, horses or something, but and he's really good at logistical type stuff, and he still gets out and hunts the right tags and stuff like that. But I like to go hunt these backcountry hunts, and I'm like, hey dad, one good like back, you know, they're like, let's take some ponies and a wall tent, stuff like that. And he's, you know, he's got to complain about his sleeping arrangement or something. I'm like, Dad, it's called sucking it up for reason. Like, this is the guy who, you know, would kick my hind end for, you know, talking like that when I was a kid.
But yep.
Anyway, I'll knock some sense into him, but, yeah. So, and you and I specifically, we have, you know, a cool connection with a couple of these hunts because, we both picked these tags up through the expo, the hunt expo in Utah, right? Is where you got yours.
Yeah. And you're a part of this story because when you grow up and you go to the hunt expo, you think it's rigged. You think it's fake. There's no way that you or anyone, you know, could ever draw a tag. So you got your moose, I think the year before me, right?
2020, I think was my moose.
A couple years before me.
Okay. Yeah, I think.
Yep. And so knowing that and seeing that, understanding it was possible, was the extra motivation I needed to actually buy the tickets.
Like, you know what?
Apply.
Well, and even that was, yeah, if you've ever heard that story, it was like a last 10-minute deal on the last day because I was working the show, obviously, for work and decided last minute. So, yeah, people do draw those tags. And here's I've said this before, but I'm sure I don't know, maybe you were more tuned in than I was, but did you know that it was just a $5 chance to pay them the full tag fee? Or were you like me and you assumed that when you drew your buffalo tag, it was just like a $5 permit?
No, I knew I had to pay for the tag as well. And yeah. I anticipated that, but I did not think it was real until I ended up paying for it and that showed up in the mail. You know, there's like that doubt in the back of your head every day moving forward till it actually is tangible.
Yeah.
It's just hard to believe. I think my odds were 1 in 6,500. I'm sure yours were about the same. It's just insane.
No, that's more incredible. So mine at the time, they don't do it anymore for some reason, but they had a non-resident only pool. So there was one of each of those once in a lifetimes, they call them, the moose, sheep, goat, and bison that were only non-residents. And the year I drew, you know, and so if anyone's ever not been to the Hunt Expo, very Utah, you know, oriented, obviously, it's in Salt Lake every year. And there's a handful of people that will come from, you know, all the neighboring states and probably further, but not many. And mm-hmm. So I think it was like 1,800 or something like that for me. So for now, they lump them all together. If there's two moose tags or whatever, they both go in the, they don't have a non-resident only, which, you know, I thought was pretty cool. But so that's even more insane, like 6,500 ish. Were you like me where I just, like, you kind of hinted that you were, but I just kept standing like in the house we were in at the time. And I just stand there, you know, in the evening or whatever, like this. And I'm like, you know, my wife, Jen, I'm like, I can't believe I drew a freaking moose tag. And I just bust out laughing. Like,
yeah, in disbelief. I absolutely was the same way. And the funny part about the bison too, specifically, is that is my favorite animal. Since I've been old enough to put in for points for my once in a lifetime, my dad and I put in four bison every single year. I have a tattoo of one. I mean, that is like the animal that I've wanted to hunt for my entire life.
Oh my gosh.
They used to be one of the most prevalent, you know, millions across the country.
Yep.
And now they're one of the hardest to get a tag for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you're so right, dude. Like, you know, moose are cool. They're cool critters, right? I got my taste of that, right? And they're huge. Like, obviously, a buffalo's huge too. And, you know, and everything, right? Like, mule deer have their story and elk have their story in the West, but nothing, and I mean nothing, has a story like the bison. You know, like, I mean, it is an entire pillar of American history. You cannot talk mm-hmm. about the history of the United States without, you know, the story of the buffalo. So.
You can't. Stephen Rinella's book about him I've read and is an incredible book. If anyone hasn't, I recommend it. So this was just, you know, it was too perfect, right? It was all just amazing. And the way that I found out, because it's public, right? I mean, they send an email out and bam, yeah. Everybody's name is there. I worked for an accounting firm in sales, so I'm not an accountant by any means, but I talk to clients, business owners is what we specialize in, hop on the phone with them. I'll spend an hour, maybe two,
locked with up. People. Yeah.
Yeah, locked up. And so I'm in the middle of a meeting and my phone just starts ringing off the hook. Calls, emails, people on Instagram sending me messages I've never met, guys, outfitters, you know, jumping on it really quick. And so I'm trying to figure that out. Like, you know, I probably didn't end up even having or finishing the conversation, but that I was on because it was just so exciting. So that was, I didn't even see it initially. People called me and told me about it. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same thing going on.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can't remember if it was my actual text or my like Instagram feed blew up, I think. Right. It was like my DMs just went nuts on Instagram. Anyway. Yeah,
it's exciting.
It's pretty crazy, man. Like, and here's the funny thing. Like, I went, you know, I was back at Hunt Expo this year for a couple of days. If you're like me, all they did was solidify getting like $5 is whatever. They're going to get another $200 from me every single year for the rest of my life. Like, I'll be on my deathbed and be like whoever's there, right? My wife or my kids or grandkids. Make sure you get my expo tags implied for, because it's
without
like
you're just
addicted now, right? You're like, oh gosh, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's crazy. Anyway,
yeah, and this year when the email went out, you better believe I was one of the first people that probably clicked on that link and was scrolling through and saw.
What did I get to share? Yeah, wait, what? Okay, so Buffalo. This is last fall, right? 23.
Yeah.
Okay.
2023.
Okay. So last fall, what was, I don't care. I mean, you probably don't care if people know which unit you were in. Because it's, yeah.
By
it's
all a, means, go ahead.
Yeah. It's a once in a lifetime, right? So is it, you were in the Book Cliffs. Is that all one tag up there? I don't know if they have. There's not two different Book Cliff, you know, there's a few different Book Cliff deer and elk units, but I'm sure the Buffalo is just, it's just a one bison hunt, right? Like,
yeah, I believe so. So I had the Book Cliffs, Little Creek South, I believe is what they called it. And I think there may have actually been a North, but the Book Cliffs are interesting because they have the North and the South. And then for some things, they have the roadless section in the middle. And that roadless section was like an untouched paradise. So I had never been to the Book Cliffs before at all, or even close. But one of the first things I did when I saw that I got the tag was call your brother Jason, because I know you guys have spent a lot of time there chasing elk mainly, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We had a few cut our teeth on a few elk in there. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that was really helpful. And years ago when you guys went out and did that, you know, you go on the elk hunts. Jason said that you saw a buffalo quite often.
Well, listen to this story. So he had that tag a few years before I did, killed it with his bow, whole deal. And that's a credible story in and of itself. I think I'm sure we've told on here, and I've probably told every story I have at this point, but anyway, I drew it a few years later, I think. And I went in with my longbow. It was in my longbow era, and you know, and it all worked out or whatever, but one cool story involved the bison that are in there. So I was heading in by myself at some point for some reason. I can't remember if I was hiking back in or something. Anyways, you know now there's kind of like that one main canyon, right, that heads off to the north, and you can cover, you know, all the way through the unit basically, I think. But
exactly. Yep. Yeah. And then there's the offshoots as well.
Yeah.
That's pretty well described.
Yeah. It's not a real secret. So I'm on that main drag and, I'm coming up through one of the little saddles, as you cross over, just a tiny little saddle from kind of one little, side canyon to the main one. And all of a sudden I come on this buffalo, coming, and they don't know I'm there. And they're just kind of feeding up. And I would guess they're definitely inside 100 yards. They're probably 50 yards or so. And I'm thinking at first, I'm like, what a cool experience. Right. And, And there's a one or two little, you know, three or four pine trees kind of between us and them. And it's real funneled. So they're coming right at me. And I'm like, dude, this is incredible. Right. And just taking it in really. I'm just kind of standing behind one of these little jack pines and I'm like, this is epic. And they're getting closer, 40 yards, 30 yards, 20 yards. And you can attest to this, when they get that close, all of a sudden you start realizing, you know, just how big those suckers are. Like, and that's about when it hit me, the fact that I'm in their way, right? This thing's funneling right to me. It's not like they're going to veer off. And all I have on me is my long bow. Right. And not that like, but I can just see this playing out and they're like this, I assume it was a bull. I mean, he was huge and he's like, you know, in teens yards. And I'm like, dude, if you don't play this right and you startle him, he might fight or flight and he might just decide to, you know, plow this pine tree in front of you that wouldn't even, you know, it'd be like a piece of grass to him and then plow you in the process. And so all of a sudden I'm like, hey, buffalo. And I'm like, you know, I step out and I'm kind of like, you know, I just went for broke, so to speak. And I'm like, dude, you got to start making some noise here. And they just like, you know, boom, like just froze. And I don't know how anyway, you'll tell your story, but it was just like, get out of our, you know, it was super anticlimactic. It was just kind of like, and then all of a sudden, you know, it kind of registered. I think that they're like, okay, we got to get out of here. And when they did, holy crap, like stampede.
Nothing's stopping them. They want to go somewhere. We experienced a little bit of all of that range that we'll talk about towards the end. So, but I got the full spectrum, which was good.
Yeah.
But I called Jason. And so your experience, you two there, we leveraged and he was really confident. You know, he was thinking, yeah, we'll go, we'll see him. If we have the time, you know, we'll definitely be able to get you one. And so we got a game plan in place. You know, you go about getting the gun figured out and gear, and those months go by really slow. And
what did you decide on for the gun? Like, what were you going to shoot?
Well, I was going to shoot a 7 mag that I have, but I was talking to, you know, Affordable Long Range in town here, and they were going to build a load for me. And we decided that it just might not be big enough. And so he actually let me borrow one of his 300 PRCs.
Yep, that'll do.
That'll do, yeah. So that ended up being really nice to have. But those, you know, a buffalo, a bison, when they're that big, they're so tough. I mean, imagine how tough an elk can be.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people listening to this have killed an elk, times that by a multiple, and that's where you end up.
Yeah. Yeah. Elk. I've seen bull elk soak up, you know, 330 cal bullets, and just like, it's, you know, a bee sting.
Yeah. And keep going.
Yeah. Just keep going.
It's like that on steroids. Yeah. So Jason, myself, my father-in-law and my cousin all got together and we showed up, you know, the roadless area. There's the south unit, the south area you can camp on and then go in on horses or on foot, and then the north.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Those are the only ways to get into it. And it's probably, I don't know what, like a 30 square mile area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice section. Like I said, untouched. And so thankfully we were able to borrow your family's horses, mules. I think one of them was from T-Bone or two. Jason ended up packing all of them into a trailer and bringing them up, and we stayed in a wall tent at the main camp.
Yeah.
Where everybody goes in at. And obviously no one's ever hunted buffalo in our group there before, but we get there and there are more trailers and horses and hunters than we have ever seen. Just 30, 40, 50 trailers full of people and horses.
Was this overlapping with elk hunts, I assume?
It did a little bit, yes. Yeah. And I think they're giving out more buffalo tags for that unit as well. I believe there were 10 or 15 of mine, which really surprised us because I thought there was going to be just, you know, maybe a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no joke, right? There's, you know, it is a vast area, but with two pinch points, you show up at that trailhead. I remember even for the elk tag showing up and feeling like, holy frick, like, you know, is this really a limited entry tag or, you know, whatever, like you just pull in, it's like a freaking, it looks like a Love's truck stop, right? With all these rigs just stacked. Yeah. So I remember that feeling.
Which can be demoralizing. So a lot of those hunters as well had guides, had outfitters, and they went 5 or 10 miles in and had their base camp there.
Yeah.
So we're already feeling like we're behind the eight ball a little bit. And it was funny when I got the tag, I asked Jason, one of the first questions was, hey, do you think we should hire someone or, you know, get some help, maybe get an expert? I know that we can probably do it, but it's a once in a lifetime tag. And his answer was a hard no, as you'd expect.
Yeah. Ironic because he is a guide, but
yeah, not there, but definitely knows what he's doing. So we end up hiking, walking on, you know, riding horseback, riding the mules. We probably put in 40 or 50 miles in the first couple of days and did not see a single living buffalo. We saw one or two dead ones, but we couldn't find one at all.
Yeah, because if you picture this country, I'm sure this was kind of your, you know, you got all these little side, you know, canyons, right, that come off the main deal, and some of them go for, you know, 100 yards and some of them might go for a half mile or whatever, right? And you know, in buffalo you wouldn't expect to be up on the side, you know, there, and it also plateaus on top. Did you guys ever get up on top or kind of stay down in the canyons? Or
we did a little bit of everything. We covered some serious country. So yeah, those buffalo are not plains animals there. They can climb and get up elevation that you would not think that they can. So that was surprising. Trying to figure that out without having any history patterning them or knowing their behavior. You know, it was all a learning experience for us, but they can go anywhere they want to for the most part.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We learned that the hard way. So we get there and we're starting to feel demoralized and we're starting to feel like, you know, we don't have an edge. And this is in stark contrast to 2 weeks before when I went out just by myself on foot for a few hours. And after walking in a mile or two, just looking over to the left, over where it borders that Indian reservation, I saw probably 100.
So you're thinking, oh man, this is going to be the easiest hunt I've ever had.
We were feeling really good going into it, and then it started going downhill fast.
Oh yeah. Man.
And so we finally did that for a few days and had talked to some of the people going in or out. And I think we saw one or two hunters get one and come out with what looked like, you know, smaller skulls. So nothing big, not a huge bull that you think about that you want to get. And we had heard, I don't know, we haven't talked about this, you and I, but had you heard about or have you recently how the Indian reservation that borders it, that they will go up in helicopters and try to scare or herd the bison back onto the reservation off of the public land?
I have not heard that, but I mean, you know, doesn't, I guess either way, wouldn't surprise me.
I heard that last year and again this year, quite a bit.
Yeah,
so we had that added element as well, making it even more difficult. And so after we got our,
did you ever see him actually flying?
No, I never did. But I talked to a friend of mine that's a guide in town here that definitely knows what he's doing, and he was saying that there was a whole cow hunt this year on the Book Cliffs that almost nobody harvested on or killed
nobody
on.
Took a cow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From the messing with them like that, because they're herd animals, you know, they're in big groups. And then I think the big bulls will get kind of kicked out and go take more of a solitary route for the last few years of life. But generally they're in pretty good sized herds.
Yeah. Yep.
And they'll get broken up and shaked up a little bit, but that's how they like to roll.
Right. Yeah, safety, so safety in numbers, right? It's kind of their MO. Like they'll circle up and, you know, I feel like they're almost like a, seem like they might be like a herd of muskox, like kind of circle up and try to come in and take one of our calves or something, you know, if a coyote screwed with them or something. But
yeah, I think they absolutely do. And so it's, I think the hunt started on a Saturday and we did that till Tuesday.
And is this like a, what was the dates on it? I'm not even tuned up on the, was this like a month? I can't even remember how long my moose hunt wasn't, it was fairly long. Is this kind of like that where they give you a lot of couple months?
This was Saturday to Sunday and it was in September.
And that's
it? That's it.
Rick.
8 days. Yeah. Saturday to Sunday. It was an 8 day hunt and they did a September, October, November, and December season. So I had the first one. Best weather, not as spooked.
Yep.
I mean, it was as good as it gets. Doing that hunt in November or December, there would be a whole different world.
Did you get to choose those that hunt, or was it predetermined with the tag?
It was predetermined. Any legal weapon, any sex.
On those dates. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Those dates. Yep.
Okay.
Which was really great because what we did see for those first few days was everything else that lived in there. It was the bull elk rut. So
yeah,
every single night, you know, you mentioned that main canyon. As we're going in or out in the morning and at night, you just hear the bulls screaming and bugling and coming down into that river where we're walking by. And so that was really cool to just be right in the middle of them.
Yep. Yeah, that hunt was when I went in there with my trad bow. You know, the reason that I was confident to take a trad bow in there is after hunting it with Jason, and it was just, I mean, you know, I don't believe they've managed that unit for the biggest bulls in the state. You know, whatever they're, I think they go off age class or whatever. It's I'm sure it's not the highest. So you're not gonna probably go kill a, you know, 400 incher in there very often, but. My gosh, like they're, like you said, it was just a elk fest. You know, they're all just everywhere, right? It seemed like you could just wake up and get into elk instantly right away. Let's go chase out, you know, which canyon did you want to go in, basically? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
I don't blame you for taking that bow in there and doing that because of the proximity we got into. And, you know, it was cool being able to walk through some of those valleys that they have in the bottom of those canyons. I mean, there's flowers and mushrooms and vegetation. And we saw some deer and elk. And I even had my father-in-law and my cousin Bracken take the truck and leave the main camp and drive around the unit into some of the lower country. And they saw antelope and wild horses just looking to see if any buffalo were down there. Cause we again hadn't seen anything. So between the two of us, until we ran into the bull that I shot, we got to see everything else, even beavers, you know, making their dams. So it was cool. It was a little bit stressful at the time, but really cool to look back on.
So you're what'd you say, 3 or so days of just pounding horse trails and peeking off into the bottoms of the basins and stuff, right? And how much mm-hmm. longer did that go on?
It went on from Saturday to Tuesday, if I remember correctly. And thankfully, your brother brought the Starlink that he has.
Yeah.
And so those are sweet.
Yeah.
He brought that. And so at night, after the first couple of days, we started texting people, making some calls, trying to get any info or tips that we could, because it turned out to be a lot harder hunt than we should have with the pressure, with the amount of tags they gave out, people getting in further than we were even starting out at. So we were able to use Instagram, which helped connect with some people quite a bit. And then the worst news of all happened. Jason got a call that he had to be home.
I remember
so it's halfway through the hunt. Yeah. And he had to get back, which is absolutely fine. But he had the horses, the mules, and the trailer and a few other things. And there is, I don't think, any chance that you could do that. You could go in there and shoot a buffalo on foot and get it out very easily. I don't even know if I'd try it.
Dude, the only perspective of that I have is my moose, right? And when we put that mm-hmm. thing on the ground, which I don't know my numbers, but there's no way, you know, I mean a bull, full grown bull bison's got to outweigh a full grown moose by hundreds of pounds, right? I mean, easily. And when we put that sucker on the ground, it was like, holy, like we hit the SOS, like we hit everyone we knew in the area, right? And we had 11 guys, and that was plenty, right? 11 guys to pack a bull moose out was plenty, but they all still had like 40 or 50 pound packs, right? Like of boned out moose meat. So yeah, I mean, it would have taken a little cavalry of guys or a small army, you know, to quarter up a buffalo and get it out. Holy crap, right?
It ended up being more than we anticipated when I got one down. But yeah, you're right. So we start feeling really under the gun. And so I ended up connecting with another guide through my wife's friend's husband and ended up getting his in-reach number. And he was on the northern end of the unit. And he had taken a hunter in the first day, shot a bull, and then had been there for the last couple of days and was just getting ready to pack his camp up on Tuesday or Wednesday. I think it was Wednesday morning.
So you're thinking like, dude, whatever the price is at this point, right? Like, honestly, you know, like, yeah, so Jason had to take off and was, I'm guessing it just logistically, he had to drag the horses home with him or whatever, right? Was that the idea?
Yeah, he had to take the horses and the mules back. It was just the only way to make it work. And so we were out of options, really. And thankfully connected with Cody, was the name of the guide on the top end. Jason was going to leave that day, you know, that morning. We got everything packed up. My cousin, Bracken, also had to leave and head back to Salt Lake. He thought it was going to be a pretty quick, easy hunt, and he had to go home and work.
Hey, bro, like... This was supposed to be over on Saturday.
Yeah. He ended up showing up a little bit late and thought we were going to have one down opening day, which we definitely didn't. So my father-in-law was going to stick it out with me. We were going to drive 4 or 5 hours around from the south end to the north end of the roadless unit, meet up with Cody, drop back in, and spend the second half of the hunt trying to find something.
Nice.
And so there's just the one road in, one road out of the camp, right? The southern camp we were at. So we all get in a convoy and we're in our trucks. And as we're pulling out of the camp on the way back down out of the roadless area to the flatland towards the freeway, Jason looks out his window and looks down at the ground on the road. And right in the middle, there's a big track. And so he gets out and looks at it, and he goes, no way. We all end up walking over, and it's a big, fresh bull track. We're thinking, there's no way that we're going to track him and find him or see him. We tried tracking other ones that we had, you know, found sign from days prior. And when you don't see what you're after for 3, 4, 5 days, you feel like you're never going to see it again. Yeah. Anyone that's hunted for long enough knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Whether it's buffalo or a freaking 200-inch mule deer, you begin, like, it's not real, right? Like you're chasing a freaking unicorn. Yep.
Exactly. So we say, what the heck, right? We're going the same direction it is anyways. And so we hang out of our windows. Jason's in front of me pulling the trailer. Then it's me, then it's Bracken pulling a trailer, and Doug's in my truck, my Tacoma, and we start driving down for a mile, two, three, quite a ways, and this buffalo's just walking down the middle of the road, and sometimes he'll go left to right and zigzag and just look for a good spot to drop off, but he is on the road.
This reminds me, so up here out of Cody, right, especially like first thing in the year or end of the year, but usually first thing in the year, like once the park opens, you know, we're the east entrance into the park. So all the buffalo come down for the winter, or a lot of them come down to this east side, and they'll come down, you know, there's like 50 miles of low country between Cody and when you actually hit the park. They'll all come winter down here. Well, as soon as spring hits, guess where they're headed back up, right? And mm-hmm. if you've been anywhere near this country, like, you know, that thoroughfare area wilderness, the road literally cuts through to get up into Yellowstone. You know, buffalo might go up over the Book Cliff little canyons and stuff, but they are not, they are not going up over most of that country. And so guess where the path of least resistance is to get up into the park?
Mm-hmm.
Right down the freaking pavement, right? And so
yep.
one, at least once every year when we're driving in there early, here's a you know, you're usually in a traffic jam, and it's this freaking 2,000-pound buffalo doing exactly what I'm imagining these footprints are doing, just ba-doom, 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 ba-doom.
taking his time.
Taking his freaking time, because guess what? The whole world revolves around him, and he knows it, and he doesn't care, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just have that kind of lazy swagger about them, but... Yeah, so, okay, so you're watching this sucker just zig and zag down the road thinking, like, no freaking way, dude. We've been all over this whole unit, and we're zigging and zagging with this bull down the road.
Yeah, just following the track, right? We haven't seen it yet, and we keep following the track. We keep following the track. We keep following it. And, you know, you start to get a little bit more excited. And finally, we get to a point where it starts to, we're almost down out of the canyon. It's starting to level out a little bit. The drop-offs off the road, you know, aren't as steep. And he cuts up into a little finger slot canyon. Mm-hmm. Not a slot canyon, but, you know, boxed in.
Mm-hmm.
He's got plenty of room to go up. It's maybe 100 yards wide. 50 yards wide, somewhere in that range. And it's a lot steeper than some of what we had been in, just cliffed out. And so we park just on the road. There's nowhere else to go. Pull off as much as we can. And we get out and we see that his tracks are going up this wash up the canyon. And we sit there for probably 5 or 10 minutes, just, you know, talking, thinking, okay, saying, should we just go for it?
Yeah.
You know, thankfully Onyx exists. We look at that on the Onyx on the app, and we see that the canyon's maybe a mile long max. So we're doing math. Bracken's got a business meeting in a couple hours. Jason's got to get home before his wife kills him and me for being late. And we just decide to go for it. So I grab my gun. Jason and I are in front. And then Doug and Bracken are behind us, and we start, you know, slowly walking up the wash. And the very bottom of where we're at is just a sandy, you know, runoff from where the water will come through. And then off to the side of that is where you get like the scrub oak and the trees, and there's a little bit of flat land with that before it turns into these, you know, really steep sides.
At this point, were you like, yeah, but he ain't going to be in here? Or were you like, dude, this is a dead bull?
I think Jason was a lot more confident than I was, because how many times do you think you have something else, another type of animal caught or stuck, and it just never really works out that way?
Yeah. If it was anything else, it, like, you know, a mule deer would doot and be, you know, he would have heard you coming, but you know, maybe a buffalo, right? They're not as spooked, right? They're, like you said, they're not really as intimidated. I don't, you know, they're not as tuned up, right, as deer. Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking, okay, maybe, like, yeah, so you were thinking, like, yeah, maybe, and you're feeling Jason was like a hound on a hot track.
Yeah, Jason was pretty confident. That was probably 50-50,
yeah,
somewhere in that range. And so this buffalo is walking up the sandy wash for, you know, maybe 50 yards. And then he steps out of it. He's still kind of in the flat ground, but he starts heading into like where the trees and the scrub oak and the bushes are. And so Jason and I are following directly on his track. And then Bracken and Doug are paralleling us in the wash. They're just staying in the sandy wash, letting us go up into the thick stuff after where he may be. And we're again, 50, 75 yards away from the road, from the trucks. And I'm not thinking anything of it, right? I'm thinking if we see him, he's going to be much farther back. And all of a sudden, we start hearing twigs breaking, limbs breaking, just a commotion right in front of Jason and I in the shade and the thick vegetation, maybe 20 yards in front of us, if that. So it all hell breaks loose. That bison was either feeding or laying down or just relaxing in the shade of a big tree. He jumps up and he spirals into the wash that Doug and Bracken are right in the middle of, because that's the easiest, smoothest way back out towards the trucks where he came from, and that's the way he's headed. So he ends up charging Doug and Bracken, trying to get out of there away from me and Jason, and it scares the absolute life out of them. Thankfully, they did the same to him when he realized what was going on. So there it is. It's a standoff. That bison put his front legs out, you know, straightened them out, stopped on a dime in that dirt, and turned back around and ran into the vegetation in front of Jason and I again.
Oh my.
And there's so much there that he made it about 20 yards in and then stopped. And you know, he was scared.
Yeah. And so at this point, he's like, kind of, is he like back against the wall kind of a situation? Like you think he was like, okay, this is where I make my last stand? Or was he just like, yeah, whatever, like there's people here, but I'm just going to go bury in here because you guys don't scare me? Or like, what do you think was... Like I'm just trying to picture. I've seen the picture and it looked tight. Like it looked really, I think I even saw the video. Like it looked tight. Like he was kind of backed into a corner feel, right?
Yeah, he really, it seemed like he was, because it was so tight in there. And so at first we didn't know what his intentions were. You know, you see, like you flash back to those videos when you see people get too close in Yellowstone and they just absolutely get flipped.
Yeah, the tour bus stops and all the
yeah. That was what I was thinking. And I thought my wife is never going to forgive me if a buffalo runs over her stepdad. Okay. So when he went back into the trees and got sort of backed up against the wall, he was pretty calm. At that point, I don't think he was worried about us anymore. Once he knew who we were, where we were, that we were just people, how many of us there were, after he got a lay of the land, he was pretty relaxed, I think, more so, definitely more so than at first.
Yeah.
And so Jason, I'm trying to figure out what to do. I ran into the wash where he was, because I'm the only one that has a gun, trying to make sure he doesn't kill anybody. And then I'm back over now with Jason. And so, thankfully, he's a pro. He helps me get my head back on, get over into a situation. We kind of pivot around. We move around a little bit, take a few steps here and there. And it's really hard to see him,
yeah,
the buffalo, even though he's only 20 yards away, just because there is so much in our way. And he's in the shade of another tree. And so we finally get lined up on him. And thankfully, Jason pulled his phone out and videoed this whole thing, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I saw exactly what you're talking about, because even in the video, I'm like, Jesus, is that him? Like, it's not maybe what it sounds like. I mean, I think you used the word scrub oak earlier, and there's plenty of that, and he's kind of buried in this, like, you know, tree, scrub oak, like this real dark shaded spot, right? And you're just, yeah. So it wasn't just like, you know, oh, he's just right there, shoot him. It was like, dude, where, like, is that him? Is that the shadow? Like, you know, obviously probably a little easier in person, but yeah, I saw that video and it was tough. Like,
it was so hard to see him that I wasn't going to get like a vital shot by any means. And yeah. So what we could do was we got into a position where we could see the outline of his head really well. And so we felt good about that. And so he gave me a shot when he ended up looking right at us, just dead on. And I can see the silhouette of his head, and I've got a little, you know, shooting stick set up, and I've got my rifle on him, and I shoot him right between the eyes, and he drops like a sack of bricks.
This is like a African elephant hunt.
Yeah, it really felt like it. We were joking around about that too, actually. And so we're high-fiving and cheering and having a great time, and then we look back over 60 seconds later and he stands back up.
Oh gosh.
And I still can't believe it. So then I finally was able to take a second shot when he was looking, you know, not at me but 90 degrees, and I put one behind his ears into his spine that ended up working, that put him down.
And you think that first one was just like a kind of cold cocked him, or, and obviously wasn't like, I'm trying to picture where the heck their brain is, and I'm sure it's I'm sure it's so small. I mean, they like, geez, they butt heads with each other and like almost like bighorn sheep, right? But like,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there is, was it, did you do an anatomy on its skull? Like, was it a little low or a little high, or what was the, my guess would be between the eyes is actually a little bit low, 'cause they've got such a huge pumpkin head above them, or like,
yeah, that you're exactly right. What was interesting when we got over to him, looking at his face, you couldn't see anything. There was no hole. There was no blood. There was nothing. The second shot, you could clearly see, and that was pretty easy to find. But the first one, there was no sign of it at all, which really was confusing. So we didn't think too much of it at that point. We ended up, you know, skinning him out, quartering him out, getting all the meat off. That took, you know, with four of us, 3 or 4 hours. Ended up being in a pretty good spot. We were able to, you know, kick him up a little bit, get a couple pictures, get him in a shaded area because he had rolled out into the sun.
Dude, you didn't just get a picture. Like, you got the picture of all pictures. Like, this sucker, anyway, I don't want to spoil, like, the magnitude of this bull, but, like, holy freaking crap. Like, when Jason sent me that, and I was just like, dude, you know how there's, like, those, you know, I've done them, right? These deer pictures where we kill one that's too small and we hold the arms way out, right?
There is way back behind.
You get way back behind. There is four full grown dudes standing. You guys somehow got this bison like perfectly like up on his, like, I can't even imagine how you did that or whatever. Probably a bunch of sticks behind him or something, but you got this bison, like the most epic position ever, just like perfectly sideways. And there's four full grown dudes behind him, like almost drowned, disappeared behind this bison. Like, I could not believe how big that freaking animal was in that picture. Like,
yeah, that we got him balanced on his legs, thankfully, but just from the his stomach to the top of his hump was 4 feet plus, it seemed.
Yeah,
just a massive animal. And he had a beautiful coat, like his hair was just like the brown to golden color phase that they do, and big pumpkin head, you know, the head that goes all the way out almost to the horns, and the curly hair on top. It was as good of a bison as you could ever find or get.
Yeah. So side story real quick to the size of these animals. Okay. So we do this class down in New Mexico at the Whittington Center, NRA Whittington Center. And for work, we do these long range classes and then we go do an antelope hunt. They have, it's like a world-class shooting center, and they have, if you ever get a chance and you're in northern New Mexico, south of Colorado, they're incredible. You can, any type of shooting you can imagine, trap, skeet, long range, short range, pistols, everything. Anyway,
oh, nice.
They have this one deal that's like this kind of novelty type thing that's the white buffalo, I think they call it. And it's like 1,123 yards, right? With our guns that I sell at work, like, that's, you know, to hit a buffalo size target at any distance is pretty easy, honestly, with any, you know, any good long range gun setup. But we did it with my buddy's sharps and open sight sharps, right? And it took us a minute.
What?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool deal, right? And he's like, dude, he's like, this guy's a real deal. And so he had it all kind of doped out and figured out. He's even got like ballistics for his sharps 4570 and stuff he's got in his in our rangefinders. And anyway, so it took him a minute to figure out the dope or whatever, but we were banging this thing. Well, someone made the comment that it was, we got back to down to the law, the store, and they're like, oh, you hit the buffalo. And anyway, there was a thing of how big they were, and it's like, oh, it's a 6 foot tall by 10 foot life size, or it set it up at the range or something. But I saw this and I'm like, 6 foot by 10 foot. And I'm like, well, surely that's like, I'm looking in my living room right now. We're in the middle of a construction project. There's a literal 4 foot by 8 foot. Okay. 4 foot by 8 foot piece of plywood.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge, right? Picture a 4 foot by 8 foot plywood, and then picture a literal, when they're on their feet, it's 6 feet high by 10 feet from front to back. Like, that's a real life size of a, I had to Google it. I'm like, bull crap. I Googled it, right? Because I'm like, this is just, they oversized it for this novelty shoot. They're 6 feet. That bull, I guarantee the full-grown one you killed, every bit of 6 feet by 10 feet on his feet.
Like, oh, yeah. I don't think they get much bigger than that one. From some of the research and what I was reading and I saw that they can get to, you know, 1800s, I think, top end.
Dude.
It's a lot of meat. That's a big animal coming at you.
My gosh, dude. So, okay. So you got this sucker on the ground and you're just like, I don't know. Just talk about cutting up a buffalo, because it's not something that many people will probably ever get to do in their life.
No, there's a picture of me and Jason holding up the back strap.
Two people.
And we could have had three behind it. You know, just that alone, looking at that picture, it's worth 1,000 words. Same process as anything else, but just the sheer size and immensity, even lifting up those quarters, right, after we quarter it out, and trying to put those in a bag and then trying to move them into, you know, somewhere else that's out of the dirt and shade and all that. That takes absolutely everything that you have for me and Jason at that point to get them where we need to go.
My
for
gosh.
A quarter. So we got all of that in 5 or 6 bags. We had extra meat in bags and coolers. And then we had the head and the hide, which was probably 300 pounds by itself.
How did you, was it just like a two-man, like probably three-man, like one guy holding the rolled up cape and then one guy on each horn? Or like, how did you even walk that down there? Like,
yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And thankfully my Tacoma's, you know, a smaller truck, so we didn't have to get it up super high with the tailgate down. But we put that in the back and then all of those quarters, and we couldn't even fit two coolers full of extra meat. Just the four quarters, the head, the cape, completely maxed out every square inch of my bed.
That Tacoma's just like, dude, what the heck? Oh.
And it's funny, my truck's got Icon suspension on it, and it's got really big tires. And so it rides great off-road, but the tires are for a much bigger truck. The suspension's, you know, pretty serious. And so it's a little rough around town. It's made for something like that. So when I had that 1,000 pounds or whatever it was in the back, was the smoothest that thing has ever rode in the 4 years that I've had it.
It's like when I'm hauling like 2 or 3 horses with my Ram 2500, right? Like you cuss them all year when you're just driving them on every little crack in the road. It's like, oh gosh. But yeah, as soon as you get some weight in them, baby, it's like, oh dude, this is a Cadillac.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. And so we, thankfully everyone was there for it, right? No one had left yet. And so we were definitely late at that point, but everybody got to be there. It was one in a million. We ended up using Jason's satellite phone app that he has to text Cody on his inReach and say, hey, thank you.
Deal's off.
We're good. We got one on the road out. You're never going to believe it. And they didn't, you know, they thought it was really, really awesome. So it all came together the best that it ever could, ended up being perfect.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, and you, I'm sure you would have, at that point, you know, any legal bull maybe, right? I don't know what you're right. Like, I don't know what your standards were at, but you were probably like, dude, this is way harder than I thought. And like, holy crap, you know, we have to actually hunt these things. And like, you were probably ready to tip any legal bull, and you got, dude, it's such a beautiful bull. I can't emphasize enough. Like, I've seen some guys, you know, there's a handful of guys every year that I know that'll have the tag up here and stuff. And I've seen, it's gotta be one of, if not the biggest, bull I've ever seen. Just epic, dude. Like,
yeah, he's beautiful. I don't think they get much prettier than he is. Just the full package, everything you could ever hope for. And yeah, I would have shot anything at that point. I had to.
Yeah.
I would have had to have.
There's no way you've gone through all the meat yet.
No. So I ended up drawing an elk tag the year before and got a bull. And so my wife and I had to buy, you know, a new full-size freezer for the garage. Sure. All good. Filled that up. And then this year had to buy the largest freezer I could find before you step up into commercial. And we filled that floor to ceiling with the buffalo meat.
Oh,
and we still have a ton of it left, probably a couple hundred pounds left. And we eat it all the time. We give a bunch away. Next, if you're in town,
come, please come grab some.
Come on by. Come yeah. grab some.
I've only had like, I don't want to call it novelty, but I've just had like, oh, you're at Cabela's and you can order a buffalo burger or whatever. But like, I'm just curious what like a, I don't think I've ever had just a like, you know, backstrap of an actual wild buffalo. Like what's the, I mean, where would you rank it? Is it like better than elk, worse than elk, deer, whatever, beef?
I would say my two favorite meats are elk and bison.
Toe and toe, like hand, like right there.
Yep, I would say pretty comparable. Yeah, I would. And we've been doing a lot of the steaks for both on the cast irons, what we've been really liking lately.
Yeah.
Yeah, so both as good as you could ever get, I think.
I'm imagining a freaking buffalo backstrap, you know, 1-inch thick backstrap steak literally taking up my whole 12-inch skillet, right? Like, is it pretty close? Like, I mean, yeah, how, like,
they're huge.
8-10 inches around at least, probably. I mean, heck, an elk's is, you know, a good sized bull will have a maybe, I don't know, 6-inch diameter, right? Like, backstrap in the thick of it.
Yeah, just, I think you're right on 8 or 10 inches for a big section of it. And we got, there's a good butcher in town that I go to here. So we got steaks, roasts, we even got some brisket. I got 3 kinds of jerky, 2 kinds of summer sausage. He even is making those little Slim Jims like you can get from a gas station, but with wild game. So we've got all kinds of different cool things he made it into.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and we ended up getting him home, took him to the taxidermist. And that first shot was just a little bit too low, right between the eyes, put a perfect hole in, came out the other side, but it was just below the cavity, the area that the brain's going to sit in. And so it blew out like the back of his sinus, the top of his jaw. So I think I concussed him, and he wouldn't have made it either way. He was pretty hurt from that, and then ended up just getting him right after, thankfully.
Yeah, but still, like, just taking one of the chops like that and then standing back up, right? Like, you know, you can always, like, moving around or kicking or whatever, but, like, he just stood up. It's like, holy crap, dude. Like, he just shook it off. Like, what the heck was that, you know?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Huh. Well, have you got him? You got his mount done?
No, not yet. It's in the process.
Still the process.
Yeah, my wife does interior design, and so she doesn't know it. But when she travels for work a few times a year, when I get that mount back, and she heads out of town, I'm gonna take our TV down in the living room and put that up just dead center for her. She'll get a kick out of that.
I bet she will. Gosh. I was going to say, interior designers nowadays, it's funny because I was thinking at first, I'm like, oh, she is going to not like this. But then I'm like, you know, it's kind of a, like almost a decorative, you know, it's like if I, you know, I don't know what your house looks like, but again, to a guy, every animal that we have is decorative, right? And
yeah,
we just can't possibly see how another one wouldn't look good too.
It's funny with interior designers, I think the bone, the white bone, you can make work a lot easier than the shoulder mount. So like I have my bear skull that she uses as decor. That's really cool. And our house looks really great. The buffalo shoulder mount in the center of the living room is going to be a little bit different than everything else that we have, safe to say.
A little intrusive.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, they really are. They're just, my gosh, they're such incredible creatures, man. Like, yeah. Well, you'll have to do one of those where you hide the camera already rolling, you know, when you get a reaction for that. If you could, we would all appreciate that, I think.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll have to do that, and you'll have to link my Instagram or something, so if people want to, they can go look at the pictures, because we've got some good ones.
Yeah, I'll use that. My favorite picture that I saw was that one I described. I'll try and use that for the cover of this, so everyone will see that, and then cool. maybe find a way to post that video up too. It's just, that was an incredible story, man.
Well, we're looking to keep it rolling this year. I went elk and then bison, and now sounds like me, you, and Jason will try to get together and do something this year. So let's keep it rolling.
Yeah, dude. God, I miss just being kind of down in that neck of the woods. It's a weird feel, because you're up here, you know, and Wyoming is Wyoming, and you know, it's nice. It's cool to go by my general, you know, quote unquote region G tag at Maverick, if I want. But nothing beats home, and you know, you guys are kind of like doing my home thing. You know, you guys kind of hunting my stomping grounds and stuff. So, yeah, dude. Well, that's cool, man. I'm so appreciative you came on. I was just dying, grinning ear to ear when Jason kind of told me his side of that story, which was, you know, this obviously the same, but it's cool to hear it from you too. And the people have obviously, my three listeners haven't heard it yet, so they're going to be, ecstatic. But yeah, man, thanks for coming on. It couldn't happen to a better guy. Like I said, we've crossed paths enough, but, Jason, you know, you guys do enough together. He's spoken very highly of you. You're a good dude. So,
well, thanks for having me on. It was really fun. It's always good to catch up with you. I appreciate you and your brother a lot. And, you know, Jason made that hunt happen. So very thankful for that. And it's always a good time when we get together. So thanks again for the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate it, man. And just like you said, let's follow this one up with another one when we're standing over a couple 200 inch bucks or something like that.
Sounds like a plan. Let's do it.
Yeah. Love it. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Finding Backcountry podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and mention it to your friends. But the best thing you can do, leave a rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. For notes and links to this and other episodes, please visit findingbackcountry.com.